This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 169. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by the boss. And so it's a rare appearance. Welcome to the show, boss.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. Good to be back.
I think Gareth is camping somewhere, and Berners is in Australia.
Yes, rubbing shoulders with Cricket Australia.
Speaking of Australia, I've been keeping my eye on the Australia-England one-day series because it's a bit of a clash at the top of the table, isn't it? England got a chance to go to the world number one in all formats if they carry on in the form that they're going for.
Unprecedented, that is. Absolutely unprecedented.
Yeah, exactly. So that's quite exciting.
It is.
But we've also seen some injuries, and it seems to be the way that things are going in modern cricket, in that fast bowlers seem to come onto the scene and bowl a few overs in a one-day international and then tweak a fetlock, and they're gone.
They're gone for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then they come back. It's a modern plague, and I think everyone looks at the past with rose-coloured glasses, obviously, because there were obviously lots of injuries in the 80s and 70s and 60s.
Yeah.
But it does seem that they break down more readily, more rapidly than ever before, don't they? You do get, I don't know if anyone's done the research, but
no.
You do get that impression.
Well, I've never seen any research into that kind of thing. The line that's trotted out in the media is usually something along the lines of it's because of the amount of cricket that they play. But I don't think that is a fact. I think in some cases that is a factor, but I don't think it's a factor. They play more international cricket, yes, but they don't play more cricket overall.
No, they don't, because in the olden days, they used to play lots of midweek cricket and go back and play for their club sides between county, state or international appearances. And, you know, I think they used to probably bowl more overs. Yeah. So I have a sneaky theory that it's two sides of the one coin here. I think it's the preparation of modern fast bowlers is thorough and getting the optimal athletic performance out of them to a degree never before seen, but mm-hmm. that at the same time makes them more vulnerable to injury as a result. You know, if you're performing at a more elite, more highly finely tuned state, then that's also making you more prone to injury. That's my theory.
That's certainly a possibility. I think an extension of that, the way that I see it, is that a lot of bowlers are very quickly identified as having a problem, much more quickly with advances in medical technology. They can very quickly pick up things that maybe they'd have just played through previously.
Yeah, and then they'll end up with a fractured vertebrae 3 years down the track or something like that.
Exactly. Instead. So rather than it being, you know, a career-ending injury at 25, it's 3 months out at 19. And then they're back to where they were. So you have more injury breaks that are shorter, and then you have less of those career-ending injuries. I mean, you only have to look at Graham Onions, who he thought that his career would have been over, and probably 20 years ago it would have been over. But, you know, he's back bowling for England.
Well, I think another good example would have been an Australian bowler from the early 90s, Bruce Reid, you know, incredibly tall left-arm bowler. Very successful, but had a lot of back problems as well. I'm sure his career was curtailed because of injury, but I'm sure if he was playing now, his career would have been managed significantly differently what it was then.
And I think the other aspect that goes into that is that generally children are less active now growing up than they were 20, 30 years ago. And I think so you have that, you specialise quite quickly into cricket nowadays, so you don't have that general all-round development that you used to have.
No, I'm not sure about that, David. I'm not sure. Because I think the kids who are likely to play cricket are the kids who are out running around anyway. If you're talking about couch potato kids, won't be playing anything.
No, true. But the general trend is downwards when it comes to... I mean, they did have some research into primary age children. I think it was 9-year-olds, something like that, somewhere around that age. And they were following up on research that was done in the late 70s. And the average number of chin-ups that could be done in the late 70s, but for a 9-year-old, was something like 6.
Yep.
And today, the average is 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's massively declined in terms of general fitness.
Well, I know my average now is probably about 1. So maybe there's some truth in that. I probably could do 6 in 1979, and I can do 1 now. I'm obviously a very large child.
Well, yeah, but you're not 9 anymore, so you know I'll let you off that. But at the other end of the scale, we're talking about elite standards. The other end of the scale, my team this weekend had a pretty much their worst performance probably ever in the history of the club, I would hazard a guess, although I haven't gone through the records to make sure. We were bowled out for 36 on Saturday.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was...
Ouch.
The strange thing is, you can't really put it down to any particular reason. You know, the batsmen weren't coming in saying, because, you know, the bowling's unplayable and the pitch is doing so much, we haven't got a chance. Everyone just seemed to play a bad shot.
David, you didn't refer to your own courses on mental attitude, and I think this podcast has covered how to manage collapses and things like that in the past. You didn't fall back on those resources?
I did. Well, I did. I was standing on the sideline trying to, you know, say to the batsmen, you know, this don't have to worry about it. We're only chasing 114. So, you know, I was standing there saying to the batsman, yeah, no problem. You've got no problem here. You know, I know the last couple have got out, but you can easily knock these off. There's nothing in the bowlers are nothing. And they weren't really, you know, they were just your average club medium place bowlers. They weren't really doing very much with the ball. We just found ways to get ourselves out.
And I'm sure there are plenty of our listeners here to this podcast can have similar disaster innings of around 30 or 40.
Well, I have to know. Yeah. I want to know what the lowest score is for the listenership. So I think if you're listening now, then get us on Twitter, PV Cricket Coach, or drop us an email, coach@pitchvision.com, or even call us on our answering machine 0208-816-7691, and let us know what is the most embarrassing score your team has ever got. Can you beat, or I don't know if beat's the right word, but can you go lower than 36? What's your lowest, boss?
I can't recall, but I'm sure it's probably less than 36.
You've blocked it out.
In my glory days, I'm sure we probably... I did play for a new team once in country Australia. A new team was formed in the off-season.
Yeah.
And all the kids who were a bit too young to get a game in their present under-16 teams, all the kids who were about 12, all went to this new team because we all knew we'd get a game at the new team.
What was this? This was under-16, was it?
Under-16, so I think the average age of our team was probably 12.
Right, okay.
We lost every match that season, in that first season. Oh. We won the premiership the next season, but we lost every match. But I'm sure there was more than one game where no one made double figures. I think 36 probably would have been a mountain to climb.
That's a heck of a turnaround, though, going from being able to be beaten every week to then winning everything.
Well, I think, you know, 12, 13-year-olds became 14, 15-year-olds. The 16-year-olds had moved on to adult cricket.
Right. Okay.
So we became the hardened group that had
that
tasted defeat and... play, and we played angry for the next year.
Oh, okay. And you didn't lose anyone. I think that's important, isn't it? If you go on a losing streak, sometimes people just go, "Oh, I must have something better to do on a Saturday than just get."
Yeah, but we were all just happy. We were all just happy that we had a role to play in our team, you know. Because if you're the if you're the youngster in the team, then yeah, you're getting the you're batting at number 8, 9 or 10 or 11. You're getting a consolation over maybe at the end of the game when it doesn't matter. You're fielding at fine leg. So we were all just wrapped that, you know, we field opening batsman role, opening bowler role, all-rounder role. You know, we all had a role, which I think was always the great attraction of all team sport is the fact that you feel you have a role to play within the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most – I think you've talked about it lots before in captaincy talks and teamwork talks that, that it's giving people a sense of belonging by giving them a role that – means that even if you've got a minor role to play, you still feel you're part of a team because you have a defined function to play. So that I think that was the big attraction for us boys.
Wise words. And on that note, I think we should wrap up this little introduction and go through to our yes-no round questions, which you have this week, don't you? And you're going to answer them alongside me this week so we can get your opinions on a couple of things as well, boss.
Yeah, and I thought it would try as controversial as possible and just talk about the future, a few questions on the future of the game. The question, will more players become free agents?
Yes.
Yes. Will Test cricket die?
No.
Yes. And will the reorganisation of the Ranji Trophy into three tiers help Indian cricket?
No.
Yes.
It's time now to delve into the mailbag and reach out some coaching questions. And the best question of the week, of course, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So fingers crossed that your question's in there. But even if it isn't, perhaps you'll get the answer to that burning question that you've had all this time that's going to propel you to the stratosphere of cricket. So, the boss, you've got the questions this week. What's the first one out of the mailbag?
Okay, it's from Ramesh in India. And he says, hello, sir. I used to bat at number 3 in my club's first 11. Mm-hmm. But due to some reasons, I had to shift to a new club. My new club consists of star players who take the first 5 positions at the top of the order, and I have to bat at number 6 as I'm a newcomer. Okay, it's a familiar story.
Yeah.
As a result, in Saturday league matches, I have to slog most of the time in the death overs, which is pretty different from what I was doing at my previous club. I was always a technical player scoring most of the runs off the ground, but now when I start slogging, I tend to go across the line and get out cheaply. Can you advise how to slog effectively? I've heard about opening your body position, but don't exactly know how does that work. Please help.
Well, Ramesh, it is a very, very common question. And in fact, you should count yourself lucky. There's plenty of players who move clubs or maybe go up to the first 11 from the second 11 or something like that and find themselves batting at 8 or 9. So 6 is a relatively good place to come in. So they've done quite well to get you in there to start with. But yeah, it's a new challenge. And that can be a difficulty sometimes, especially if you're playing in a role. We were talking about roles earlier, playing in a role that's unfamiliar to you. But I would say my key point for this really is that you don't need to change your game as dramatically as you think you do. I mean, Ramesh, you're saying there that suddenly you have to slog across the line and you keep getting out. Well, obviously that's not working for you if you're a touch player, you know, you like to play in the V and all that kind of thing. But you can still score plenty of runs by playing straight. You just need to make some slight adjustments to the way that you are aligning your body possibly, or adjusting the face of the bat slightly to close it to get it ball onto the leg side, or slightly to open to get the ball more onto the offside, or just play even straighter. There's no fielders behind the bowler's head. So you can hit the straightest of straight drives over the bowler's head for a 1-bounce 4, and you can be off to a great start in the over. So I don't necessarily think that you have to make massive adjustments to your technique in order to fill your new role. It's more of slight adjustments and more of a mental approach. You think, God, I've got to slog every ball. That's not necessarily the mental approach you want to walk out with. It's more that I want to rotate the strike, get up the other end, watch a few balls from the other end, hit the ball straight, and do my best to play within the limitations that I have within the match situation. Have you ever batted in that position, boss? What's your view on it?
Yeah, well, I can sympathise, Ramesh, because I'm not a natural slugger either. I'm an opening batsman and I'm technical and I push and prod a bit before I open up, and I'm not a good slogger at all. But I learned a lesson. I think a lot of players probably learned the same lesson when 2020 started, for example. Mm. You first pressure, you needed to slog. And I was spectacularly unsuccessful whenever I tried to slog, just like Ramesh. And the lesson I learned actually was, there's a difference between playing expansive shots and slogging. And the most important thing I found for me was, look, keep your head still.
Yes.
Maintain the your usual trigger movements, etc. Keep your head still. It's more about put more power into shots, but still play straight. Don't slog. The answer is don't slog. Keep your head still. Watch the ball. Maybe come out of your crease a little bit more, and come up and meet the ball and change the length of the ball so that you can play. Still play your technical shot. So if you're a strong driver, for example, mm-hmm. Well, the solution there is not to throw away your left leg and open up your stance and hit across the line. The solution is to come out of your crease a little bit and play straight. But because you've changed the length, it means you can loft the ball and then loft it straight. And for me, that was all the difference. Kept my head still, maybe came out of my crease a bit more, but still played a normal shot. But because it was effectively a full toss or a half volley, I could loft it and get it over the infield. And I had a bit more success that method. But slogging, for me, was a disaster. And it always is. I just end up missing. I play across the line, and I usually just miss the ball.
Because what that says is it's a psychological thing. If you're going in thinking I have to slog, then you're changing your technique in order to match your psychological state of mind. Whereas really you should be keeping your technique exactly the same and then just making your state of mind a slight adjustment to know that, okay, you know, if you get a good length ball, you're not going to block it. You're going to get your hands a bit higher and hit through it a little bit more. And okay, maybe if the ball swings away or moves off the seam, you're going to nick it to the keeper and, you know, you're out second ball and unlucky. But you've got to take a few more risks, but that doesn't mean you have to throw everything out of the window in order to take those risks.
The second question today, mm-hmm. How do you make a... This is from... Vibhav, mm-hmm. I hope I've said that right, Vibhav, also from India. How do you set up a perfect run-up for fast bowling?
This is an interesting question because I've had a few questions related to the run-up recently. And I think maybe it shows that some people put a little bit more emphasis on the run-up for a fast bowler than perhaps they should. Ian Pont said to me once, this was a few years ago now, and I'm sure he still believes it. He said, I'm not really that bothered about the run-up. As long as they're not bowling no balls, it doesn't really bother me what's happening with the run-up, because all the business happens between those two lines when you get to the crease. That's your office. That's what he said to me. That's your office. That's where the action happens. What happens before, what happens afterwards, it doesn't really matter so much. Because you run up, you just have to get there and make sure that you land in the box, and then your follow through is just a consequence of what happens in the office. So which is quite an interesting point that he made. But still, you don't want to completely neglect the run up. So my first part of that would be a proviso to say that don't stress too much about the run up if it isn't perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. All you have to do is be able to get to the crease in such a way that you're not going to go bowl a no ball and you feel like you're approaching in a nice rhythm. The way that you do that, the classic way, which as far as I'm concerned still works perfectly, is that you find a pitch which no one's using, and you start at the crease, just probably... You don't want your foot completely breaking the line. That's a bit old-fashioned nowadays. You can go back a little bit. You want to make sure that you're not going to bowl a no-ball, especially with these days of free hits. So maybe start a little bit away from the front line and then just run up as you normally would, but in the opposite direction, And then when you get to the point where you feel like it's time to jump into your action, then jump into your action and make a mark where you jump from, or get someone to make a mark where you jump from, and do that a few times. And what you'll find is there'll be some variation, but eventually you'll get to a point where you find that exact spot which is just right for you. And some people will find that's a lot less paces than others, but there's no hard and fast rule really with it. You don't really want to debate it too much. If you have a massive long run up and it works for you, then use it. With maybe the one thing I'd say about having a massive long run up is it wastes a bit more time, so maybe not have a massive long run. But you know, if your run up's a bit longer than normal, don't worry about it too much. If it's a bit shorter than normal, don't worry about it too much. The key thing is when you get to the office, you're feeling good.
Well, and I'm not a fast bowler, I never have been. But the one thing I've observed around club cricket is inevitably for young fast bowlers, one thing you can be almost certain of is however long your run-up is now, it's probably too long. You've probably added five paces to it that more than you need to be balanced. I mean, various coaches, Ian Pont included and others, will talk about straight lines and, you know, aligning yourself to the crease. And if you come in on a straight line, you're more likely to bowl on a straight line and other variations of that. And then that's maybe not true. I'm not qualified to answer it, but I do know that a lot of people overrun, take far too long, and should concentrate on what is a smooth and, but most of all, evenly repeatable run up that your body recognizes the muscle memory of that run up, so that it's as consistent as possible, so that it's not a variation. The last thing you want in a run up is that becomes a variable in your delivery.
Yes.
You don't want to be thinking about which foot do I launch off, or how fast close to the stumps I am. You want to have a very strongly repeatable run up so that all you're really concentrating at that point is head, shoulder and hand position. And that's about the only advice I can give on that.
Yeah, and that's very sensible advice. You know, the less noise, the more signal. So that's exactly what you want. Remove as much noise as possible from every part of your action, from the beginning right through to the follow through. So, if you haven't got a repeatable run up, then make sure that you get one with that little drill that we talked about earlier. And that's an interesting point as well when it regards to younger bowlers. Because when you get to a certain age, you start to grow very quickly, your legs get longer, your stride gets longer, but you're still using the same run-up. That can throw people off a little bit. So you do get problems with younger bowlers where suddenly they find that they're all out of rhythm and they can't think why. And it's because they've grown 4 inches in the winter. and they haven't realized. So when you get to that age, we don't know how old Vibhav is, so we don't know, or if he's a coach or whatever, but when you get to that age where you're growing quickly, then you probably want to retest your run-up at least at the start of every season around these teenage years, and probably halfway through the season as well if you're growing very quickly. So bear that in mind. If you suddenly feel like you're out of the rhythm and you can't work out why, then that could be part of the problem. It's time now for the Soapbox. 60 seconds of a rant or a praise or a comment or a thought from one of the members of the team who has their free reign to say whatever they like for just 1 minute, or if it's Berners, it's about a minute and a half. But just 1 minute this week, boss. It's your turn. You don't get many chances, so make it a good one. Here we go.
My thought for the day is, why aren't playing conditions more flexible? And by that I mean, for example, in a 2020 match, if there is very high likelihood of a rain interruption or a significant rain interruption, why can't the umpires or the match referee change the playing conditions to say, in the likelihood of rain interruption, let's play 2 10-over innings each, rather than let one team get through 20 overs and then the next team only get 3 overs and get washed out and no one gets a result at all? It would seem to me make perfect common sense and not disadvantage either team, but be great for the 10,000, 20,000 spectators who've bothered to turn up and the sponsors that they really get a match. Another good example is a couple of years ago, a game up in Yorkshire, international match, where 20,000 people had turned up, was abandoned because of a wet patch at one end of the game. So 20,000 players, spectators missed out on seeing a game because the players couldn't agree to bowl from one end only. Seems inflexible, doesn't seem reasonable.
Okay, so that wraps up the show for this week. But before we head out back onto the internet to let you go, we're just going to finish off with a few points. And the first of those is the competition. Of course, the prize on offer is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we have two questions this week. One from Ramesh about changing roles and changing teams. And one from Vibhav about fast bowling run-ups. So, boss, you're in the chair this week. Which one did you prefer?
Ramesh. No, related to his problem, and it was a very interesting dilemma for him. So, Ramesh, the course is yours. Use it wisely.
Congratulations to Ramesh. Yes, we've all seen that in our teams, and I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who are in that situation at the moment. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do, and the way to get in touch with us is via the normal offices. Boss, you've got the phone number there.
Phone number, please use it, 0208 816 7691. And if you're calling from out of the UK, there is a bunch of international numbers on the podcast website. So look them up and leave us a message.
Yes, indeed. And you can email us in that old-fashioned email, coach@pitchvision.com, or you can use that brand new fangled Twitter thing that everyone's talking about, PV Cricket Coach. You can head over to Facebook, use our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And if you want to listen to us every week, and why wouldn't you? We're amazing. Then you can go to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. Click on the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not leave a 5-star review?
Yeah, there's a couple of good reviews on there, actually. So try and top those.
Exactly. And if you don't want to use iTunes, then you can head over to pitchvision.com, click on the podcast tab at the top, and every single link there has got instructions on how to use the RSS feed. So if you're one of those geeky types, then you can throw it into your iPhone, or you probably use iTunes, or throw it into your Android phone or something like that, and use the technical version. But if you don't want to be technical, then no problem. You can use one of the other methods that we just talked about. So before we finish up, we've got our weekly tail ender, our phrase or slang of the week. And this week I was wicket keeping as normal, and our opening fast bowler was standing at mid-off, as he often does when he's finished his spell. And he's one of these fast bowlers, we all know them, tall and gangly, very good at running in and bowling quick, not so good at fielding, and it's a long way down for him, you know, 6'4" or whatever he is. So he has an unusual technique when the ball's hit to him of doing a long barrier, the classic child's long barrier of leaving a massive gap between the knee that's on the ground and the foot. And somehow or another, he manages to get his hands to the ball every time, so it's fine. But every time the ball struck firmly to him, everybody has their heart in their mouth. Is it going to bobble and go through that massive gap or not? So we've christened him as him having the longest barrier in the league, because he's got great long legs. He stretches out. I'm sure he's getting a good groin stretch out of it as well. So maybe
possibly another cause of injuries to fast bowlers.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. You must have seen that, boss. You must have seen the fast bowler who struggles to get down every week.
I see a lot of fast bowlers who make very theatrical groans and efforts as they demonstrate to the rest of the team how hard it is for them to get down. Yes, I do. I have seen that, and I have very little sympathy for them, to be honest.
But he's 21 as well, so he's got no excuse.
Oh, he's got no excuse.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, but yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen one week. I mean, he's going to go through that gap, and he's going to look like an idiot. But then he does look like an idiot a lot of the time. I was showing him something on my phone before the start of play, and I've got one of these backgrounds, photograph backgrounds, and yep. He said, "Wow, that's a really nice." That's a really nice landscape photo. And I said, thanks very much. He said, where is it? Swansea? I said, no, Cape Town.
Because Swansea is well known for its views from Table Mountain, isn't it?
Exactly.
I've often gone down to Swansea and taken in the sights. I'm sure Berners has a story or two.
Oh, no doubt. Well, having gone to university in Cardiff, I'm sure he's got plenty. And a terrible accent to go with it. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Thanks for filling in, boss.
Thanks for having me. Bye, all.